And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Comes a time for Kauai Soapbox. Hard to Pod Down Neil. That was one of my favorite songs in high school. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall.
Aloha, Felicia. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha. And so we are going to be talking about basically politics and the environment. We seem to talk about that a lot, but there's a lot to be said on that. A guest that we will have in the studio today, she'll be on about 4:30, is Fern Rosensteel, and she is running for House of Representatives of District 14, which is Wailua, Kapa'a, Anahola, Kilauea, Princeville, Hanalei, Haena. So it's the northeast side. And so we'll be hearing from her, but right now I'd like to say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Go Farm Hawaii at Kauai Community College is a not-for-credit program offering those interested in agriculture a combination of knowledge, experience, and support to assist them in becoming viable production growers. Wednesday, April 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. is the Ag Curious Seminar held at KCC's OCET building, room 106 C and D. Hear from successful farmers about their growing experiences and learn more about the Go Farm training program. More information and RSVP at 245-8318.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We really do so deeply appreciate our underwriters and even things like Go Farm Hawaii. They do a great job. Happy to have Eric Hansen in here quite a bit. I saw him last night. He was at the Joint Fact-Finding Study presentation. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, too. But, Marshall, I want to acknowledge the people from around the world that are listening to us right now. And Australia is on and listening, and maybe some of Fern's friends and family down there might be. She's got some Australian in her background. Just to start with, Marshall, I know today is the presidential primary in Wisconsin, and I have intentionally not looked at it, because I know that you're really on it for looking at it. So how did that go, and is it both the Democrats and the Republicans?
The Democrats and the Republicans today, and we have some significant results already.
Okay.
With 31% of the Democratic vote reporting, Bernie Sanders has won with 53.5% of the vote.
Okay, so it's not a huge win, but it's a win.
It is not a huge win. And the significance of the numbers there for Bernie are that in the rest of the primary race, he needs to get an overall 57% of the vote. So although he has won the state in the sense of getting more than 50%, and at this rate he's going to get 44 of the total delegates.
If it's state, it's only 30%. So how's Hillary doing?
She's got 44 to 28 right
how,
now.
How can you have that 40? Because there's just that. How can you have 44 to 28?
Delegates?
Oh, no. Like, what's the percentages?
Oh, 53.5 to 46.2.
Okay, all right.
So anyway, he's falling short of sort of his magic number at this point. And this is Wisconsin, where he has a number of advantages going in. The demographics are in his favor. It's an open primary in which he does better. He's got the momentum going into this. He has scored victories nearby. And with all that going for him, to only get 53-54%, it's falling short. So hopefully that'll get bumped up. It still is fairly early, 31%.
You're showing bias. Uh-huh.
Well, yes, that is my bias. Okay. I hope that he does a lot better than that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so on the Republican side, we have results as well.
Okay.
And here it's looking good for Ted Cruz. Actually, my little computer thing is spinning and spinning. Fortunately, I know that he has something like 50% of the vote, and the rest being split between mostly Trump and some for Kasich. So that was expected. And important for the Stop Trump movement. As we know, Ted Cruz has no chance of winning the Republican nomination on delegates at this point. The question is whether or not Donald Trump is going to be prevented from getting a majority of delegates going into the convention.
Okay, well, that's kind of a big deal. And that's the only state voting today, right? And then is New York this Saturday?
No, New York is 2 weeks from today.
So there's a gap after today. Are there other places?
No, that's it. The next one will be in 2 weeks. And, of course, New York will be a big one. Hillary Clinton's adopted home state, and Bernie Sanders grew up in Brooklyn. A large number of delegates there. It's being fought out really fiercely, hugely important to both camps. Here are the results for the Republican race today, with 31% reporting Cruz being called as a winner, 52.5%, Trump with 30.6%, and Kasich with 14.7%.
Okay, all right. So that's kind of a big deal. Now, other things that I wanted to talk about today, they're a little bit later. Fern's going to be in here with us, and we're going to talk about the state government, but related to anything and everything is the environment, because that's what's around us. We are going to be talking a little bit about the joint fact-finding study. That public meeting was yesterday. I went. It was relatively well attended. It was in the Veterans Center.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And I saw Gary Hoosier there. Nadine Nakamura from the mayor's office was there. Joanne Yukimura was there. Just because I didn't see these government people doesn't mean that they weren't there, but I do pretty much always stand up and take a really good look around and try and see. I saw Paula, you know, from the mayor's office. There were some people in there from the mayor's office, but I didn't see any of our representatives or our senator. Like, that is a big issue that affects the state. I didn't see Clarice Gardner. Just because I didn't see her doesn't mean she wasn't there. That's the representative for the governor's office. But this is about pesticides, and in that, All 8 of the members who were on the joint fact-finding study were there, and they broke it down, and I felt that they did a good job. It was certainly a civilized reception, not that I expected less than that. I guess that just comes up to my mind because Peter Adler kept enforcing everybody needed to be civilized. Sometimes it kind of gives you like, you know, I guess that means we're not, but it was a pretty good balance back and forth between, in terms of the crowd, how many people were there that work for those companies and people who maybe are concerned about the pesticides. And they did what I felt like was a pretty good job of exposing why we need to have more information. Adam Asquith, one of them, though, he said it pretty well. Like, what was real interesting is that there's no numbers that we could put out that would be statistically significant. Like, our population on the west side is just too small, or the people who live around these areas. So it doesn't matter what the numbers show. They'd say it's not statistically significant, and they is, I don't know, larger powers that be than anybody sitting in that room. And the question was asked of what would be statistically significant. And that wasn't even seemingly able for them to answer. They couldn't say, well, once you hit 50,000 or once you hit 500,000, and I guess it's kind of on a curve. You could have a small population if, say, you had 500 out of 2,000 people had a certain characteristic. That would be statistically significant. It's kind of like a ratio, how much you have over out of how many. And so Adam, what he had said, he made, I felt like, a really good point, is it's like as if they were to say how many people need to be victims of secondhand smoke. He's saying this has been tested in other areas. Why do we need to have a statistically significant number here? Can't we look at what is in other places? There was two representatives of the industry that were on the panel, and I felt that they spoke well. I mean, what was nice is that there was clearly respect for everybody involved, and there wasn't, you know, clear agreement. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later. A couple other things that will be coming up in the environment. Last Wednesday, I was with Terry Lilly and the scientist from the Navy, and to some degree, Commander Bruce Hay. We had him on the show twice, and what had come out of the first meeting was that the commander said he would be willing to meet with Terry Lilly, who is a scientist, a citizen scientist. It's interesting, you know, people are not considered real if you don't have enough letters after your name. But, you know, you can have citizen scientists who are out there looking at the data regularly. And so he has concerns about one of the things he's postulating might be a problem is the electromagnetic field of radiation that's coming out of the different towers, both at the base at PMRF. You know, there's certainly others. And tonight at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association at 7 o'clock at Kilauea Neighborhood Center, one of the things is a new cell tower that they want to put on just on the Kilauea side of Kalihiwai Road. So having had one be going in across the street from me, it caused me to study it and be aware of just how profound these towers are at putting out a field around them. And the amount of energy that goes out for 4G is what I just read in an article today, 60 times more than a 2G cell phone or cell tower. I have a 1G, by the way. I frustrate my friends and don't have a smartphone, trying to not be too much of a hypocrite, but I still do have one. So we're looking at that in alignment with studying up on that one. I've spent 3 days snorkeling down there at Anini. Thank you, Marshall, for coming and being a witness yesterday.
It was a joy.
Yeah, and Terry had said to go down to the very far end and had sent me a little bit of a map thing of how that was in the lee of the cell towers. And, in fact, there was definitely more coral heads and a little bit bigger fish. But what I have noticed at Anini is the seagrass has really, really grown. The first day I went out snorkeling was an hour before I even saw a fish. And almost all the coral was dead in the eastern end of it. And, you know, I saw one sea cucumber. The next day I tried harder and I found more fish. But they were all little bitty fish, you know, that I'm used to seeing mature and maybe 12 to 18 inches rather than 2 inches. So it was, you know, I don't know what's going on. But it's good that we're looking. And I will say that with the Navy, they were, you know, definitely recognizing that something very profound is happening. I wouldn't say that there is agreement of why it's happening, but the outcome was that they were definitely willing to be working with something like UH to be working on it. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Carl Berg calling in.
Hey, Carl. Thank you so much for calling in. You're with Surf Rider Foundation, correct?
Yes, I'm currently the chairman of the local Kauai chapter of Surf Rider, and I'm also head of the Blue Water Task Force that does the water quality monitoring.
So thank you for calling in. I'd asked you to call in. It's great. I was hoping that you could help us have a better understanding of what all was came up, like the scientists came over, correct, this weekend or last week to look at what's going on at Mahalapu. I saw that there was two different articles in the paper. One was written by the representative of Hawaii Dairy Farm, and I don't remember who wrote the other one. It might have been Jessica Els from the Garden Island, but there's been a couple articles in there about the high level of bacteria in the water.
That's correct. And what precipitated this were two things. One was that Surf Rider came out with their annual report on the levels of bacteria in the water for 2015, which included both the data that the Department of Health has and also the data that Surf Rider collects on a monthly basis. And the other thing that came about was that there is a lawsuit against the dairy farm and the owners of the property, Grow Farm, concerning the Clean Water Act and the need for a National Pollution Elimination Discharge System permit for any kind of construction going on that would affect the clean water. So those all happened this past couple weeks, which brought about the articles.
So who's suing them? Who's suing Hawaii Dairy
Farm? It's Friends of Mahalalapu are suing, and I think it's basically demanding that that they did not get a NPDES permit for all of their construction activities, and that they went ahead anyways, and that in fact that has polluted the water in that area.
So what does NPDES stand for?
National Pollution Elimination Discharge System Permit. So it's to eliminate any pollution discharge. And in this case, it's not against the dairy farm alone. It's against the owners of the property out there. And I'm not sure of the proper names from, but it's the property owners, Grow Farm, and they're who they've leased the ag land out there.
So I believe last month there was something like 15,000 bacterial count in 100 milliliters of water. Is that right? They're really extraordinary numbers.
Yes. So every month we do the testing all around the island. And on March 12th, when we went out there, I'm just pulling up the numbers, the count for the Waiopili stream out there was 15,531, which was not the highest that we've ever gotten, but it's one of the highest that we have gotten out there. And just looking at the data for 2015, the average for the 12 samples that we took out there, the average was 10,000, and that meant that 100% of the time it exceeded the statistical threshold value of 130 that is in Hawaii administrative rules. That's the
right,
law
so
that you shall not exceed 130 more than 10% of the time. And here, whether it's Waiopili Stream, Niamalo Beach Park, Hanama'ulu Stream, Aloha Landing, the canals in Kapa'a, Gillens Beach, now Willy Willy Stream, all of those are 80% of the time they exceed the state standards. So another way of interpreting it is that your chances, 80% chance that if you go to that beach, it's going to be polluted.
So I've been following this, and there's been a lot of pressure on the Department of Health. So just for people who haven't heard about this before, the bottom line is there is basically fecal bacteria in these rivers. And at least from what I read in the paper, it looks like that's less human fecal matter but more animal. Is that correct?
It's very hard to differentiate whether these bacteria are coming from warm-blooded animals or humans. And what the Surfrider tests for is the national standard, this Enterococcus bacteria. And we test for it with the exact same procedures as the Department of Health does. In addition, the Department of Health uses another test looking at another bacterium, Clostridium perfringens, and together they say if you have really high counts that should be human bacteria. Once again, if they're not positive, they go and they look at the RNA of some of the bacteriophages, Bacteroidales it's called, and that indicates whether it's from a human factor or not.
And why we
and
care about this.
In the case of Waiopili Stream, they all showed up saying there's human sewage, human fecal matter that is in that stream. Now, the reason why Surfrider on a national level is pushing for this is that there have been international studies, more recently one in America, that showed that if you have the average of 35 bacteria per 100 ml, and that's one of the Hawaii standards, one of our rules, it should not average more than 35. Well, if you have 35, that the health risk is the same for cattle or for humans. And so in the case of Waiopili Stream, we know there are cattle back up there. There are not milk cows back there, but there are cattle back there, and there are sheep, and there are a lot of wild pigs, and there's a lot of there's ducks and things like that. The other thing is that if the bacteria are coming from pigs or rats or seagulls, then at 35, there is a much considerably less public health risk. So it's 10 times less or maybe 100 times less public health risk if the bacteria count is 35.
So when we are caring about this, there's two reasons. One, for people who are in the stream, but also because the dairy is planning to put another 2,000 cattle in there. So when the stream was first looked at, the thought was, okay, let's get a baseline of when it's clean so we can see the impact when 2,000 animals are committed to this valley. And lo and behold, it was really huge even without that. And because we've covered this story a number of times, so we understand that the septic field where the sewage will be going is very, very close, like 750 feet from the well for Kalua. Is that correct?
Well, let me just finish up something
okay. First
here. And that was that I said that the if the bacteria are coming from other animals, there's much less considerable health risk. But you have to remember that our count last month was 15,000, so that's what 500 times the available limit.
Yes.
So that means that there is considerable health risk in there, even though it's coming from animals. Now, what our study has shown is that stream is definitely polluted extremely heavily with fecal matter. And exactly what percent is human, what percent is animal, it doesn't matter because the extremely high levels. But what it also shows, and this follows your comment, is that as the best management practices are at the moment, that the land at Mahalalapu is not retaining all of the sediment and all of the fecal matter from the small number of pigs, cattle, sheep, ducks, dengue, whatever is out there. So at the moment, there's maybe a couple hundred pigs. I have no real idea. But, and there's maybe a hundred cattle and maybe 50 sheep or something.
And horses go by there.
Yeah, there's horses, but our sampling is taken way upstream of the horses.
Okay.
So that horses are not a problem because the water runs downhill and we take the sample uphill from the horses.
Okay, so Carl, I'm going to bring it a little bit broader than the detail now. How has the state worked with you? Has it been easy to work with the State Department of Health or the State Department of Ag or the governor's office, any of that? Because pretty soon I'm going to be interviewing Fern Rosenstiel, just in case you don't know. She is running for House of Representatives for District 14. Have you felt that the state has been an effective partner to Surfrider or Friends of Mahalapu or the concerned citizens for looking at what is going wrong with the water?
Part of the reason all of this is coming out at this time of year right now is because we saw the grave catastrophe in Flint, Michigan, where the government at all levels, from the local Department of Health to the higher up Department of Health to EPA to the governor, totally neglected the citizens' complaints. They neglected the citizen scientists. They neglected the pediatrician who was bringing it up. They dismissed their results. They said it was bad science, on and on. And looking at that, we suddenly said, well, that's the exact same thing that I've been putting up with for the past 5 years, except the public health risk is not as bad as lead in the blood. It is bacteria in our streams and also lepto, which is deadly. And so there is a strong parallel between that and here. And the parallel is that government is not responding to the citizens' complaints. And it was really not until we got no satisfaction. The Department of Health withheld that sanitary survey for over a year, even though we legally asked for it and begged for it. And they just stonewalled and held it back and dismissed what we were saying. And until we finally talked to the governor's office directly, and we talked to the head of the Department of Health, we talked to heads of EPA, and I have to say here, we've got the support of Representative Tokioka and Senator Kochi, who we've spoken to and who have attended meetings on our behalf. So, but the direct agencies that are involved here, which would be the Clean Water Branch, have been dismissive, and it's the same thing, I think, Felicia, that we're seeing with the whole pesticide issue, where the Department of Agriculture is being dismissive.
Well, yes. I mean, I'm going to agree with you on that, and I think that even something that we saw last night when they're speaking about data or lack of data, it was really hard to listen when we are told relative to the pesticides that, in fact, there hasn't been the test of the soil, the water, or the air, except for a few hit-and-miss tests. So when we are consistently told there's no proof of this, it's because there simply hasn't been an inquiry, you know, not a serious inquiry where something is looked to be found out. And that's why even when I'm, like, we won't go detailed in this, but there's, like, a new cell tower to be going up in the Kilauea area. They say, hey, there's no proof that, you know, cell towers are unhealthy for you. It kind of feels the same way to me. It's like, okay, there's no proof because they're not looking, and the Telecommunications Act does not allow state or municipal governments to even entertain the discussion of health as a result of these towers. So, you know, we kind of get our hands tied as citizens.
Well, I agree. But that's where Surfrider Foundation and myself personally, when the pesticide issue came up, and they said, well, you know, there's no data, there's no pesticides out there, therefore there's no problem. Surfrider went out and undertook a pesticide study, a survey, a screening, and we took 92 samples from 44 sites all around the island. and have been able to present this to the Joint Fact-Finding Commission. But this is not this is citizen science that we're doing, and it's meant to show them that, in fact, there is a problem that 80% of our samples came up with pesticides of 59%, almost 60% had glyphosate in them, and that this indicates that there really is a significant problem and that they should be looking at it. The other thing was the Surfrider support student research, and we have one guy looking at groundwater contamination, one looking at plastics in the guts of birds, and Ritika Kumar did a great study on glyphosate in the honey. And this is a very scientifically rigorous study, and found here, when we looked at honey directly from the hives, not what was on the market, but from the hives, 11 out of the 31 yards that we got it from, or 35%, had detectable measures of glyphosate. So how did that get there? And when you look at it, it's the glyphosate is found mainly in those watersheds, those apua, and in areas where there is 60% or more of the immediate area in large-scale agriculture, whether that's coffee or seed crop.
So you're listening you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Carl Berg is on the phone with me. Carl, you have letters after your name, right? Are you Dr. Carl Berg?
Yes, I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD, and a 40-year career publishing number of papers and books on in marine biology and watershed management and ecology.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that, because sometimes what I hear is denigration of citizen scientists, and so you have all the paperwork to know how to be doing this accurately, and so I appreciate that you're doing this, and we'll have to have you in the studio with us sometime.
Yeah, I'll be able to do it. Yes, I'd like to do that sometime. We can carry on more about this. But I think the point that I would like to end with is that Surfrider, as a nonprofit, non-aligned organization, is out there, and we're testing the water, and then when we find it that's a problem, we try to notify the appropriate government authorities, and we're asking for them then to follow up in the approved scientific fashion. And unfortunately, that's not what happened. That's not what happened at Mahalalapu. And our big push on a national level now is for citizen science to be recognized, and that places that are potentially polluted, they should be put up warning signs. What came out of the meeting last night was the whole idea that you should protect the people, precautionary principle. You should protect them until such time you find that it's safe. You don't just say, oh, we're going to test this more and more, and then 20 years later say, you know what, it wasn't safe.
Right.
So it's the same with our streams, the Willy Willy, Kaloa Landing, Hanama'ulu, Waiopili. These things, from all the basic information we have, these things are polluted. And following the precautionary principle, we think that they should be posted with warning signs until such time that the Department of Health can say, hey, it's no problem that the levels of bacteria in it are not that high, or that they are not harmful to humans. One of the things we have here on Kauai, which makes the high counts really meaningful, is that we have leptospirosis. It's a leptospire bacteria, and this can be deadly, causes kidney failure, causes all sorts of things. So when you have extremely high counts of bacteria, which are probably related to wild pigs, it probably means there's pig urine in the water, and the urine is what carries leptospires.
Yes.
And so because it's nice and warm all year long and the leptospires can live in the water, we're at an extremely high public health risk when we have high bacteria counts. And so that's why I am really adamant and am working very, very hard. And we are asking people to write to the Department of Health, go to our Surfrider website.
What is
send
it?
Send them a letter
Give
and
them-
say, Hawaii.surfrider.org.
Hawaii.surfrider.org. Okay.
Or you can go to the national website, surfrider.org, and just try, or just send an email to the director of Department of Health saying, you know, cautionary principle, please put up warning signs until you can be assured that it's safe.
Okay. And then if people want to make a donation, they could go to hawaii.surfrider.org. I appreciate that you guys clean up the beaches. You do a whole lot. So you are basically a non-government organization that is intervening, doing some of the important due diligence that the government should be doing. And in fact, Friends of Mahalapu, I've had them in here before, and they are, in fact, doing the same. And the landowner should be thankful for what is happening, because that due diligence really saves them a lot of effort and energy, and we need to protect our watersheds. So thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, and one last thing. I'm not sure I heard you right. I represent the Kauai chapter of Surfrider.
Yeah.
And so our website is kauai.surfrider.org.
Okay.
And we are supported solely by our contributions and our membership.
Okay.
And I am really appreciative of how many volunteers we have taking water samples, cleaning up the beach. And we are really an independent, nonprofit organization representing the community on Kauai.
Okay. Thank you so much for everything.
Aloha.
Aloha. Wow. Well, that is actually a great lead-in. We have Fern in the studio with us. Fern, let me make sure you're mic'd up.
Hi, Felicia.
Hi. So,
hi,
Kauai. Hi. Yes. So Carl just brought up a whole bunch of things that you're actually pretty strong on. One, volunteerism, helping to develop citizen activism groups for helping do community development. You're all about the environment. Your education's about that. And now you're running for House of Representatives for District 14, which is basically north of the Wailua Bridge to the end of the road. So north and east Kauai.
Yep. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your background, and then if you have some thoughts on what he has just shared, I'm happy to hear that too.
Okay, thank you, Felicia, and thanks for having me in on KKCR. I'm originally from Kapahi. I was born on Kahuna Road and raised mostly in Kapahi and through the North Shore. I went to Kapahi High School. I graduated in 2002. I went away to Australia where I attended Griffith University and obtained degrees in environmental science. I have a bachelor's of science with majors in marine biology, wildlife management, and environmental science.
Is that a triple major?
It is a triple major.
So, biology.
It's a bachelor's of science and then majors, multiple majors. I couldn't exactly decide where I wanted to be.
Okay, so environment, biology, and?
And wildlife management.
Okay.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of what Carl, I just caught some of what Carl was talking about, and obviously that sits very close to my heart. My marine biology major touched very, very in depth on the many aspects of the marine environment that are a threat, and we have major problems, everything from runoff and increased nutrients and many, many other concerns like lepto and other diseases in the water and stuff. So I really appreciate all the great work that Surfrider does and everything Carl does for the community as well.
And then you heard a little bit about the joint fact-finding study. You're familiar with what that is?
Absolutely, yes. I actually led a group of people, a handful of us were able to meet with the governor a few weeks ago and sit down with him and talk about the recommendations that are being put forward in the joint fact-finding group to try to get actual action on that state level. That's actually what inspired me to run. It was the day after or the day of meeting with Governor Ige on Oahu in his office and talking to him about what he could commit to right away to give us some serious traction in some of the disclosure and the buffer zone things.
Of pesticides?
About pesticides and the things that we've been working on very strongly ever since I developed 2491 with Gary Hooser.
2491 was an ordinance, which is like a law at the county level, looking for buffer zones, and meaning distances away from the fields and houses, hospitals, schools, and then disclosure for what kind of restricted use pesticides. The hope was for general use pesticides also, as they're sprayed.
Absolutely. And what we learned from the joint fact-finding group is that that's exactly what they recommended as well. So they've come back and said, we don't have the information that we need. We don't have the disclosure. We don't have the data. We don't have a big enough pool of information to even pull from. So we really don't know what's going on, which is exactly what we were saying in 2013 and what justified the passing of 2491 to give us that information. And it also suggests buffer zones. It talks about environmental monitoring and studying, exactly what we were talking about as well. And it really reinforced a lot of the concerns that we've had as a community.
So when you went to see Governor Ige, did he help you in the way that you wanted to be helped? Is that what caused you to want to run for office, or did you not get enough help and that caused you to run for office?
I've been considering it for a long time now. I won't say it hasn't been on my mind. I've been encouraged by a lot of people to take a more direct role, and I guess after having the conversation with him and realizing how slowly we get progress, I can keep deferring that to other people, or I can step up and try to make those changes on my own, or not on my own, but being that person in the place to try to make those decisions. I feel like I might be able to have a more direct impact. So it just inspired me to step up and step out of my comfort zone. And rather than pushing other people to make those decisions, be in a position where I can help make those decisions.
Now, you have been going to the legislature for about 3 or 4 years. I've seen you over there very actively.
Yes, I have, probably since 2012 when I returned home from Australia, yes.
And now I've even seen that you've gone to Europe. You've gone further than just even locally looking at this issue. People might see you as a leader in the awareness movement. I would say that you've been you're a key person in Ohana o Kauai, and that is not all young. I'm part of it, but it is largely a youth-driven movement from my perspective. Does that seem consistent to you?
Yeah, I have been really involved over the last 4 years in this issue, and I did... You know, it's actually been 9 years that I've been researching this from the time that I very first put the connections together about what was going on here, compared to the global context of this research that I learned about in 2007, yeah, for the first time. So I've been working very hard on that for about 9 years now, and in the last 4 years, I have been very active on that issue. But there's a lot of things in our community that I am passionate about as well, and I think a lot of people do understand that I'm very committed to that issue, and I have been, and I'm kind of looking forward to giving the opportunity to really talk about all the many issues and how they play together, because over the last few years of working with government, I've just been exposed to so many other failures and operational failures and how we do things, blockages, other issues that play into our ability to get these land accesses and everything from, you know, all kinds of issues that I'm now really interested in. And so, yeah, I'm excited to step up and show how I can provide more insight into other issues as well.
Okay, well, I'll work with you on that. We can talk about a lot of different things besides the environment. I do want to give a shout out to the fact that you were part of Sea Shepherds. Am I remembering correctly on that? That's kind of like the muscular end of a Greenpeace type of movement.
Yes, when I was a little bit more daring, I guess you could say, in college, in my years at university, I was involved as Sea Shepherd. I got the opportunity to work with a lot of professors that work in different areas of conservation biology, and I was had the opportunity to connect and meet with Sea Shepherd and Paul Watson, and I was asked to join the direct action crew, and it was an amazing experience.
So you were out on the ships?
I sailed to Antarctica in 2007 on the Steve Irwin, and I got an opportunity to see how some of these organizations work from the inside, and it was an incredible opportunity, obviously, to see Antarctica as well, and to be involved with other conservationists in the marine sector. At that time, I was really focusing on marine biology major, and it was actually not long after I returned from Antarctica that I decided I really liked land a lot too, and I expanded my degree to be more botanical based, and I started doing a lot of botany work, and realized that I really wasn't limited to my passion about the marine environment, but I really was passionate about the environment in general. And I got some amazing opportunities through those networks, and I got some opportunities to work in the Southern Alps with some amazing professors that I had in university that specialized in climate change and adaptation of plants in the Southern Alps. And I got to work in Kosciuszko it was amazing. I really, the Sea Shepherd and conservation experience led me in a lot of different directions of knowledge. And
actually, having a little bit of experience off of Kauai, I get that you're a born and raised here candidate and that this is your dominant blueprint, but you did go to college in Australia.
Right, and I do bring another perspective, and I think in a lot of ways, on how things can be done in other countries and stuff, yeah.
So you said you had some other passions. I want to make sure you're able to talk about those before I pull you off into some different questions. So when you're looking at participating in state government, what are you passionate about?
I am passionate about a lot of things. I'll definitely say that. I've been focusing on trying to really understand a lot more about what is state government responsibility. And, I will say that, you know, probably my biggest weakness is my lack of experience in politics. I don't know a lot about it. I've never been a politician before. I've never thought I wanted to be.
You've been an activated citizen.
I've been an activated citizen, and I've looked at it from outside and looking in. And so I think, I've really been trying to wrap my head around a lot of the details that I think a lot of us don't understand. I'm trying to understand the budgets and how the budget breaks down into different things and how we spend this over $6 billion a year and the different budgets that it goes into, et cetera, et cetera, and try to understand why we're falling short in all kinds of areas. I've reached out to many different organizations and got the opportunity to hear from many different constituents about their concerns with education, with, I mean, everything from traffic and transport and safe infrastructure and the roads that we have and to the education and how, you know, we have 400 vacancies around the state where teachers just don't exist and students literally just don't have teachers for core classes. We have, you know, major underfunding problems. We have all kinds of issues that I'm seeing are really a state level issue. And one of the reasons I decided to run for state office rather than focus on a county position, because I feel like I can really have more change on that statewide level where a lot of these big issues are managed and overseen for the above the county level. So,
you know, when we see it's like over a $12 billion budget for 2017, I actually gave Marshall a math problem. Did you split that out? I was kind of curious of what that. Do you know how many people we have in the state, Fern? Is it like 1.4 million?
I'm not actually sure, no.
Well, we'll look at it what that is loosely. So what does that work out?
I got 0.714. Does that make sense? Do I have my zeros correct?
0.714. What? Like 1,000?
I don't know. Tell me the question in words.
Okay, I'm trying to look at if you have 1.4 million people and they have to cough up a 12. Point
okay, yeah, total budget 12.7 billion
budget. Because I looked at that last week with the county budget, and you know it's loosely the county budget, the operating budget for the year. It's like $2,500 a person, you know, loosely, if we just. You know, some of that's coming from the feds or it's coming from different places, but what it costs to operate the county. I just think it's really important for us to have our minds on, you know, what money we want. When, especially on this show, there can be a lot of complaints about what we need, but when we look at what do we have to cough up, you know, and when we have all these infrastructure pieces. So a family of four, that's almost $10,000 if they paid their share of what the county is spending.
So $914.
Is that all? $914? That's not too bad.
It's all these kind of numbers I'm really trying to get my head around, and that's what over the next, you know, few months I really want to commit to trying to learn all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's so much to cover. There's, I was, yeah, just trying to look at it the other day and all the different splits and why education is underfunded and trying to wrap myself around how we've allowed our children to be not the number one priority.
There's a lot of priorities too, right?
Right, like, and that's exactly right. How do you choose where to take it?
Right, the Department of Land and Natural Resources gets about 1.5% of the budget. You know,
right.
You think about, well, how do we work with that? You
and
know,
we can't. Yeah, and that's we can't, and that's what we've learned over the last few years. Like, we can't fund the pesticide regulators. We can't fund the oversight. We can't fund the tests. We can't fund. You know, even the Department of Agriculture is really struggling with dealing with the invasive species and a biosecurity plan. And there's so many different asks. I was seeing in state legislature this year that Scott Enright was trying to get more support for that biosecurity plan and the funding to do these kind of things and get dogs at ports and stop the invasion of new invasive species that are coming in every single year because of our slack oversight on what comes in and out. You know, we absolutely were failing in so many ways. So I'm excited to figure that out and understand and really where all this is going and if there is waste in ways that we can figure out how to better direct that into things that matter most to our communities.
And I see that Derek Kawakami, our existing representative, he's going to run for county council next time. He has been a councilman, and so, you know, that's a new direction, I mean, a return to an earlier direction, but he's not giving up on our community. He'll still be very actively involved in helping, but his seat is opening up. And when I'm looking at your direction, you might have noticed that there's a presidential election underway. She's nodding her head. This is radio. They can't hear that. So Bernie Sanders, he is really resonating with the younger population. And can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 31.
You're 31. Yes. Okay. You're older than I thought. I remember when you were little. 31. Okay. Well, that's pretty grown up. So 31. Okay. But so when you look at the national election, are you seeing how there is corollary at the local level? I mean, what is your reflection on his message or any of the other presidential candidates' message? Where do you see some parallels that might be here?
Well, a couple of people have definitely told me that they feel the fern, which is really quite interesting.
They feel the fern. I got to remember that one instead of the burn.
But, you know, I have been inspired by Bernie Sanders myself. I've been following a lot of his campaign. I love the fact that he has been independent in his views and in his politics for so long and passionate to his beliefs and seems to be a politician that hasn't got crushed by a system, you know, almost keeping that activist heart alive to do what is best for the people, being a people candidate. You know, obviously the way he's fundraising and, you know, not taking monies from super PACs and corporations is incredibly impressive to me. I huge amount of respect for that campaign and a huge amount of respect for what he's done. And, you know, I stand by him in a lot of his core issues. You know, I think education is a top priority as well, just like he thinks on a federal level. I think on that on a state level. And really, I feel very closely with him along the free college. I love that he's pushing, you know, opportunities for people to get educated without going into massive debt. However, the details of whatever we want to call free really is, I think that we can all agree that something needs to be done. And for me personally, I mean, I obtained an education from another country where they do provide education for their people.
So you didn't have to pay for school in Australia?
Yeah, no, I did not. I mean, I do. You pay a certain percent. They have a system that's set up by the government. If you're an Australian citizen, you go to school. Basically, after you graduate, if you start making a certain amount of money every year, you pay taxes back throughout your lifetime, and you end up paying back about 25% of your education. But it's never a burden on your ability to survive. It doesn't put people back. It doesn't stifle the economy. It doesn't stifle learning. It doesn't prevent any poor person that has no money, no parents, maybe whatever, you go to college because you're an Australian citizen. And I think that, you know, maybe it's not exactly the same here in America. We have a very different system, and I'm not saying that it is, and you can just take something from another country and go, oh, that'll work here, because obviously that's not the case. But I like the fact that Bernie Sanders is looking for those opportunities to get our country educated and to get our youth educated, because honestly, I feel like that is the most important thing. If we're not educated, we don't make the right decisions. It cycles around. We go into poverty. We have drugs. We have violence.
And in that alignment, something that has often caught my attention with Senator Bernie Sanders is what he has to say on incarceration and how we jail people. And he has been really, really strong on that for decades. I remember watching a couple decades ago. I mean, like, not decades ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, there's over 2,000 federal felonies. You know, I run out of fingers and toes when I'm trying to count up what should be a felony. And so I'm sure that number is bigger now. But something that he said that has resonated with me is when you're looking at giving people better educations, and sometimes when people have a hard early childhood, putting them in Head Start or putting him in preschool might be the kind, if they don't have an easy home life, that could be something that works really well. that keeps people out of prison. And we spend a fortune. We spend so much more on incarcerating people. Have you looked at the incarceration topic?
I have, and I've been looking at it on a statewide level over the last few weeks since I've decided that I would run for state house. And, you know, I agree with Senator Bernie Sanders on that as well, and I find it appalling that we are one of the most jailed nations on earth, that we incarcerate more people than many, many other countries, and Hawaii being among the top within the United States. And, I, you know, it hits home personally for me. I've had a lot of friends, you know, growing up here, born and raised in this community. I've seen a lot of friends struggle with addiction, people that I care very much about, and I've lost friends to a range of bad decisions that have left them end up in incarcerated, and you know, wherever it may be, KCCC, OCCC, Halava, or even sent away to places like, you know, Utah and Arizona. But I have to say that, like, I find it appalling that that is the state of our country. Like, the core issues, the social core issues below, the fact that people are struggling to survive, that they can't pay their bills, that our cost of living is so extremely high, that they can't get the help that we need, that we don't have a rehabilitation center here, despite 90% of the people in KCCC being there because they need some sort of rehabilitation help or could benefit from rehab because they're drug-related charges or secondary drug-related charges. You know, all of these issues that then release people back into society completely unprepared to survive, without an ID, without information, without any training or skills or anything to then go back into society and be dumped without even an ID. You're basically subhuman. You're not even, you don't even have human rights anymore without an ID.
Without an identification?
Without an identification, you can't do anything. You can't get a job to get a money. I mean, you can't. So I think that there's a whole system of failure to help actually rehabilitate and help people that are forgotten, that really should not be forgotten, that are mothers, that are you know, children, that are aunties, that we have a very big problem on our hands. We have a high overpopulation rate in Hawaii, particularly. I'm, you know, just talking on a statewide level. I mean, nationwide, but
overpopulation in the islands or
in the jails?
In the jails.
The
okay.
actual jails are very overpopulated. From what I understand, Kauai Community Correctional Center here on the island is 170% over capacity, and we have inmates sleeping on the floor. And so, you know, I'm definitely for, you know, in a lot of countries, they decriminalize drugs altogether and they turn it into a health problem. And I'm for an approach that addresses this as a health problem. I do still believe that we need strong, like, regulations and stuff, and we cannot allow, you know, drug dealers to continue to release, you know, these products onto the streets. And we need to address that issue for sure. But I also understand that we can't just jail everybody up for addiction and for these problems. We need to address it from a health point of view. And I may not have all the, I definitely don't have all the answers on how to do that, but I'm totally committed into making that probably the top priority for me in office, is really addressing those social issues, everything from the education to the rehabilitation to the, you know, the job and training and getting people with skills. You know, I have
housing.
Yeah.
Housing is huge.
And the housing first.
Housing is, you know, when you look at a problem, to me, the incarceration challenge is a symptom of these other weak spots.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And actually, political injustice to our Native Hawaiian population is,
right,
is definitely
roughly 50% of the people that are incarcerated, especially long-term incarceration in the state of Hawaii, are Native Hawaiians, which is also, it's completely disgraceful. And we have social issues that have got us to this point that need to be addressed. And we can't keep jailing all of our people. We can't keep building our jails. And in fact, by building our jails and by putting more money into the jails, that money comes out of that budget and therefore has less money for the rehabilitation, for the health centers, for the building of hospitals and rehabs and, you know, all kinds of systems in place and programs that will actually help with the bottom line cures, like curing the problem rather than band-aiding these constant solutions that come in that aren't solutions.
Or sanitizing the community of our young, highly spirited kane. You know?
Yeah, and I'm appalled to see that, you know, there is no rehabilitation, like established rehabilitation program for while you're actually in jail. And that, you know, from what I hear, you can still get drugs in jail, and a lot of people talk about that and how our systems are not that secure and how people still manage to get these things in. And there's all kinds of research that goes into how this happens. But honestly, it's a shame that we can not provide our are incarcerated with the means to rise above. And beyond that, we have non-forgiveness of felonies. We have, you know, a lot of people, first of all, in the state of Hawaii, they think a lot of their rights are taken away. Most people that are felons have said to me, oh, I cannot vote for you. I, you know, I have a felony from when I was 18 and I got in an argument and, you know, got a punch somebody and now I'm a felon for life, you know? And I think those kind of charges help to keep a really, really important group of our society down. And once you're under that system, there's like a no forgiveness, no comeback policy. And I think we really have to look at how we treat, I mean, these, one day you're going to be sitting on the bus next to this person when they do get out of jail in 10 years or so. How do you want them to be able to act in the society? Do you want them to know nothing of, but what it's like to be in a horrible situation with other people that are also in a horrible situations and don't have the skills to get out of it? We really, really have to look at this and absolutely, like, addressing the drug problems and the incarceration issue in one holistic manner is going to be a priority of mine throughout everything that I do for our community.
Well, that's great. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and in the studio with us is Fern Rosensteel. She is running for District 14, House of Representatives for the North and East of Kauai. Around 5:15, we will be taking callers for Fern. In the meantime, I would like to really mahalo our underwriters. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Stainless Steel and Galvanized Aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
The County of Kauai announces our semi-annual Household Hazardous Waste Collection event for residents only. Bring your unwanted hazardous products from your house, garage, or yard free of charge for safe disposal. Acceptable items include pesticides, solvents, car products, oil-based paints, fluorescent lights, batteries, and more. Collections will take place at the Hanalei Transfer Station and Kapa'a Base Yard near the recycling bins on Saturday, April 9th, and at the Lihui and Hanapepe Transfer Stations on Sunday, April 10th. These events will take place from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on both days. Please do not bring latex paint because it is not considered a hazardous waste and will not be accepted at this event. For instructions on disposing latex paint and questions about the hazardous waste event, please call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841. That's 241-4841. Or check out our website at www.kauai.gov/recycling. Please help keep our garden island green and join us at the next Household Hazardous Waste Collection event on April 9th and 10th. This event is for residents only. Businesses are prohibited.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. That's really great, the hazardous waste.
Absolutely,
local,
yeah.
Things. And I know I've got to make it to the next e-waste. I think that we are losing that opportunity. Hey, Marshall did his math. If there wasn't federal sources of money, that is $9,143 per person. So those are big numbers, and, you know, before you quote that off to anybody, I mean, you probably want to, like, double-check on the population numbers, but because those are both approximate. But it's, I think, really valuable for us to look at, you know, how in hock we are, because if it's $10,000 for a family of four to be really contributing, if we were self-reliant at the county level, it's $10,000. But then if you have four people in there, it's almost $10,000 apiece. It's $36,000 plus $46,000, and never mind the federal government. You know, at some level, what we're looking at is just not going. It can't be there when you're 80 years old. You know, this is an unsustainable trajectory we're on financially.
Right.
So, you know, we get money from the feds, we get money from different places, but we got a big mess, you know,
yeah,
in terms.
We definitely do. And it seems like all of our social services and our different programs are really suffering from it, you know. And I just want to be clear too, like while we're talking about this incarceration thing, I absolutely believe that people deserve to be in jail. I absolutely believe that there are people that do horrible things that need to be incarcerated. And I absolutely believe that every single one of them, whether they're in there for murder or whether they're in there for a speeding ticket that they can't afford to pay, because we do have people that are in jail because they're poor and they can't afford to pay a ticket. I believe that all those people deserve help to get in to the direction that they need to go, whether it be psychological help or major help or whatever it is, so that if they do and when they do come back out into society, that they're fully equipped to do so. But I just want to be really clear that, you know, there's a lot of violent crimes, and I'm not suggesting that we should just have like some sort of free for all, but I definitely think we need to drastically look at how we are incarcerating people.
Well, when we're incarcerating people for being poor, it costs us a lot of money.
Right,
to,
and what
to
they do while they're in jail.
Poor.
Because people could be doing great things for the community, and they could be giving back and learning, and instead of being, you know, kept in to these situations, they could be doing programs where there's like farm, you know, farm work in programs in the community, and like major, all kinds of different things, like giving back, building, all these things that cost so much money for government. We could save huge amounts of money, you know, you correctly help, you know, in a very respectful way, having those people work for whatever it is for reasons. And I just feel like we really, lock people up, we forget about them, we don't pull them back in a community, get them engaged, get them volunteering, get them helping, getting them giving back and empowering them to feel like they're not just people in society that have nothing to offer, you know. And it's just a really, it's a hard subject for me.
So I want to throw a couple acronyms at you. One is the TAT, the Transient Accommodation Tax. Yes. Have you followed the story on Transit Accommodation Tax and understand what that means in terms of county and state financing?
Yes, I am aware of the fact that the counties have been totally capped on the increase in that, and they're given a really small proportion, and it's become kind of like the state of Honolulu in the sense of that money staying on Oahu and in Honolulu. And I'm definitely for pushing for counties getting more of that money and making sure that that's spread across the board. I think it's really important that all counties get that.
Yes, because that was... that was, you know, originally instilled so that the visitors would be sharing in the burden of the county monies for roads, parks, police, fire.
Right. And, you know, we get a lot of visitors here on Kauai. I think we, you know, we get a very high percentage of people that come here. I know all the islands do, but I feel like it should definitely be reassessed. And again, because I'm just falling into this and just deciding to do this, I really got to catch up on exactly what those numbers are and what percentages we've been kind of cut off from. But we definitely need to look at that and get those funds coming into the county levels throughout the state.
And then I noticed that you were over in Maui when the Trans-Pacific Partnership was under discussion. I think that that's a very important thing for our state-level people to be aware of. Would you like to share with the listeners what is the implications of the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
The Trans-Pacific Partnership is an international trade deal that would, again, you know, just to summarize and without going into too much detail, would really just put the people after corporations. It's something that it's a bigger picture international level control. It would force, you know, pesticides and other products onto countries that have for a long time not taken them, and kind of strongholds countries into doing what big corporations want, and I'm definitely not for that.
Yeah, it basically, you know, supersedes nationhood, and so companies can sue the countries that are in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and certainly state municipalities to say, no, anything you do that blocks our ability to make profit, you owe us that difference.
Absolutely, and I think that's why we see the kind of fear that you see after passing a bold ordinance like 960 or Bill 2491 with the pesticide and disclosure stuff, because there is a fear on the lower level governments that these big corporations now have so much power that they can just shut us down, they can sue us, they can do all kinds of stuff to actually attack government itself. And it's really, it's an attack on democracy, it's attack on freedom, it's attack on the very foundation of what we should be standing for and our sovereignty and rights.
Yeah, it's very much like taking away home rule to even a higher notch.
Right, to the overall trumping of all home rule, exactly, even on a national level.
What do you see as the challenges of the young families of your generation, the born and raised here or moved here? What are the biggest challenges that you see that they're facing that maybe there is some way that the state can help them with?
With what? With what?
What are the big challenges? A person is just randomly, let's say, 30 years old. What are the impediments to having a life that is of a comfortable level for them?
Right. Well, you know, I see a lot of my friends really struggle to survive. You know, I mean, almost everybody I know works two jobs or works incredibly long, hard hours to survive. I think here in Hawaii, we really face a lot of issues with cost of living and education that's failed us and all kinds of things that have not put us in the position that we need to be able to really have productive, sustainable futures and raise families. And it's sad for me to see friends of mine have children and not know if they're going to be able to support a family and stress out about these kind of things. And it cascades into other social problems. You know, everything from, you know, medical problems, depression, you know, male depression, women depression, all kinds of things that affect the overall health of our community.
And then have you, I actually know that you do pay attention to the issues of the Native Hawaiian community, you know, where
Absolutely.
We're looking at Niuapuni and the self-determination. Did somebody call with something, Marshall?
We had a caller who just would like you to introduce yourself very briefly again. He thought the conversation was interesting, but
okay.
Didn't know who you are.
Hi, my name is Fern Anuinui Rosensteel, and I was born here on Kauai. I am a graduate of Kapaa High School. I was born, raised, educated, and I work in the district here in District 14, and I'm running for State House.
House of Representatives.
State House of Representatives. To represent the community. I'm a bachelor's of environmental science. I'm very environmental focused with majors in marine biology, wildlife management, and environmental science.
And I would say that you are a natural leader. I'm going to like really give you a number of kudos on that one because you have been a central figure in motivating, you know, masses of people to feel confident enough to stand up and have their voice heard.
I really appreciate that. I think out of everything that I could do, if I could help empower people in our community to stand up and fight for everything that we all need and want, and keeping our country and keeping our environment safe and, you know, instilling the principles of aloha aina and respect to one another, then that would be the number one thing I'd love to do. And, you know, a shout out to Mason Chalk and his leadership program on Kauai because he does a lot of really great work in that way. And I've been fortunate enough to have a little bit of that leadership development program insight and a small, you know, training on that. And it's really a great program. And, you know, I'd like to think I'm growing as a leader, but I appreciate that, Felicia.
And you are involved with community developers and community activists around all of the islands. I mean, I've seen.
Yes, in the last couple of years, since this level, like since the county ordinance kind of came more, much more statewide conversation, when we started, we were just, you know, a handful of people on the side of the road with a sign wanting somebody to listen to us.
And in the studio here
and just talking and not giving up and just banging on the doors and banging on the walls, making somebody listen. And you know, Gary Hooser was really the one that stepped up and listened to us and took us seriously and sat down and then realized that we were actually onto something and we weren't just talking about stuff that, you know, like wasn't real. So he sat down and really helped work on 2491 and create that disclosure buffer zone bill. And that's what first inspired me to like actually care about politics and go, oh, wow, government can actually do something good. Like I first kind of dismissed the whole concept of him being able to help us. I was like, oh, that's nice of him to like entertain us. You know, maybe he's campaigning or something, but then I realized that he actually did want to do something and it really kind of re-inspired me to look at that and consider politics as an avenue for change. And in the last 2 years since it's gone to like, since we were sued basically by Syngenta et al. To sue our county to stop the bill, it's gone to the statewide level and in the courts and in the conversation. And I've got to connect with other people on Maui that worked on the moratorium over there and other people on the Big Island and throughout the islands that are working on aina-based solutions for the future and the bigger picture of food sovereignty here in Hawaii and changing our food system, producing agriculture, changing the whole, just transforming our agriculture system into something that actually produces food for our communities in a huge way. And I know we're a ways away from that, but I have a strong vision of the future, and I believe we can get there.
And at a personal level, you and I are both what I call yardeners. We both
are creating our
own food in our own yards, and so living it out, and that's the way Kapuna, you know, all over the world actually really did, because locally grown food is what things were based on. And so how do you feel, and do you see direction that you could, as a representative, really work to support true food production in, you know, your district?
Absolutely a priority of mine. I'm committed to helping to transform the food. It's something I will work on regardless of what position I'm in. It's something I will work on for the rest of my life. It is a homeland security issue for us here in Hawaii. We have a nation far away from anywhere else, isolated here with people unable to survive if we stop getting imports. And I think that's a critical issue that we have to look at very, very seriously. We have a very low production of food here in the islands, and we eat a lot of things that aren't from our island. So transforming our food system into a native foodways, native focused food system that totally, you know, it's been a long time coming for me. It's been many years in the making, giving up the American food I was kind of raised on slowly. I'm not saying that I have entirely, but I try more and more every year and every day to be more a part of that and eat more out of my garden. And since I've got a home now in Kapahi and I've been able to really focus on trying to grow my own food, I do eat out of the garden a couple days a week and eggs every single day. And I'm just really trying to, every meal that I eat off my land is, I just do it one meal at a time, because it is such a big and hard thing to look at on a full scale. And
it'll
Yeah, it's going to get easier. I believe we're making it easy. Every single day, people, like, you know,
like my place, I have so much food.
Amazing.
So much food. And I was a hoarder sadist, right? I just kept plants on the edge of existence. I've noticed that you have taken active roles in supporting the Alaloa and, you know, the ability to be getting to the beach, to be going up into the mountains.
Absolutely.
And you know, watershed management and looking at the Ahupua'a management style.
Yes, definitely. Watershed management is critical in Australia as well. They run off of a system kind of similar without even knowing that they're taking off the Hawaiian principles of Ahupua'a. We have in Australia watershed management that works on everything that is runoff within a valley. So it's really a similar framework that they work on there, and how to maintain the health of the water systems. And I've been really passionate about that for a very long time, restoring, you know, water flow. I strongly oppose Bill 2501 in the State House right now that would take that water, you know, legally steal a bunch of water from Hawaiian farmers and taro farmers.
Is that on Maui?
Yes, on East Maui at the moment. And we have a similar situation unfolding in Waimea as well. And I think that, you know, those water access issues is one issue. And then there's people access to sites as well. And I was present at the Waipahe'e standoff a few weeks ago, and, you know, really appalled by the level of, it's a complete lack of clarity when it comes to people in charge of these lands about who and when people have access, and the blocking of government roads and the blocking of access to key resources is a really big issue.
Can we look at this old government road issue? Something that I know is really important to me that I would like to see. So I don't know what you think about this, but is, you know, when things like that go on the docket for the Board of Land and Natural Resources, or when things are in there for the Council on Water Resource Management, will you be able to make sure the community is aware of what's coming up? Because it's easy, you know, people get so busy. When you're in there, it's just rapid fire, like 3,000 bills in 90 days, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. And I know you've been absolutely on top of it through capital.hawaii.gov.
I try, but I wouldn't say absolutely.
I gain weight every legislative session, because you pretty much have to be tied to your computer.
Yeah, it's rough. It's like an attack for you. Just like, they introduced this.
Every day. But so those people who are over there and working that task, it's a big thing. When you worked in Australia, you kind of had, I can't remember, you've told me in the past, you had a pretty solid job in terms of the direction of civic planning, right? What was your job when you were in Australia?
I actually got a really great opportunity when I graduated to take on an environmental science position with a large global consulting firm, which was never where I wanted to go. I was like, I'm going to become an environmental scientist. I'm going to work for the EPA and I'm going to save the world. And I'm going to, you know, protect all these environmental native forests, our local native forests here in Hawaii, and protect the environment. But then when I got the opportunity to have this job and I graduated, you know, I was really worked hard in my final year of college. My father had died of cancer, the start of my last year of college, and it really inspired me to really, really, buckle down and do a great job. And I graduated in the top 5% of the university and got an awesome opportunity I couldn't pass down. And so I started working for this major consulting firm, and I got the opportunity to work on all kinds of infrastructure projects, major government projects, multi-billion dollar things. And it was a great lesson about not compromising values as well. I was put on an LNG job that I had serious issues with.
Liquid natural gas?
Yeah, and I worked on a lot of different things, including the decommissioning of the F-111s for the F-111s for the Australian Air Force when they got new planes and, like, big, our team. I actually didn't get to work on it personally, but our team that worked on the Gold Coast. And I just got a major insight into a lot of different applied science work. And I was stationed for 1 year in central Queensland as the environmental officer for the Department of Transport for the state government, and managed a lot of road infrastructure projects and in clearing ecology work. And
if I remember correctly, your father is Australian. That's why you had an open door for that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a call, and then I want to give a shout-out to Aaron, your husband, because then you end up getting a little bit of his knowledge, too. Aloha,
yeah.
You're on the air.
How's it? Can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, right on. I just wanted to say I support Fern, and I'm glad she's running. But I also, it's coincidental that you were talking about advocating for a better share for TAT. And I just recently called the state tax department, and I asked them a simple question. Does the Big Island put more money in the state's kitty towards the TAT, you know, like they earned and what we give them? And the answer is no. Hawaii actually puts more money towards the collection of TAT than the Big Island, and they get 4% more than us.
Yes.
And the thing about it is they also have they also do a thing where they've changed the way they classify their corporation to, like, a spa and therapy treatment, whatever. I forget what the state people said. So they kind of get out. Some of those places on the coast don't even put money into the TAT because they're classified differently.
Right.
And so, yes. So
do you have a question for Fern?
I do. As somebody who will be able to be in a position to not only advocate the county getting more money outright from the TAT funds, but are you willing to put your political neck out there and advocate like the Big Island's legislative body has, so that they get 4%? Are you willing to say the numbers don't add up and we need a fair share on both fronts?
Absolutely.
And so that kind of was my statement and question all wrapped into one.
Okay, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Matt. I definitely will. And I think that's really important. I'm all about sticking my neck out to do the right thing, and I think that's the right thing to do.
Thank you so much, and that's why I'll put my vote next evening.
Mahalo, Matt.
Thank you. Well, knowing you for quite some time, I would say...
Since I was a baby.
Since you're a baby... You are very willing to look at the rough questions and do the research, and, you know, I would call you anything but a go-along to get-along person. You are highly engaged and paying a lot of attention to all of these things.
I appreciate that. I will continue to do that.
Tell us about Aaron for a moment. I don't know if he's listening. Aaron, you're really rock solid. He's an engineer, right?
Yes, he is. And my husband Aaron is an amazing, probably one of the smartest people I know. I always say that. He has a master's. He has actually two masters in geotechnical and transportation engineering, and he specializes in transportation for many years in Australia. He does geotechnical. He has a very, very strong geotechnical base, and lately, more recently, he does other kinds of engineering as well, and construction, more learning about house construction, and even electrical engineering and solar work. So
yeah, they do quite a lot of self-sufficient building, correct?
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
And he's an amazing person. He went to college for 7 years, and just incredible grades. I won't embarrass him on how incredible, but really, really incredible grades. And he just, he's got a lot of insight on the traffic and transport side of things and development and a lot of the engineering stuff that's kept me grounded. And, you know, like, we definitely complete each other with the environment. I know you can't cut down that tree to build that big highway there, but you can move it over here and we can compromise.
Right. Well, I'm just bringing that up because sometimes you have quite a bit of insight, and then I think, gosh, how do you know everything, you know? And then you then you go, oh, well, and you usually say what he has helped you to learn. You know, we learn from each other. We learn from the people that are close and around us.
He's definitely my closest advisor in a lot of ways, and particularly when it comes to stuff like that. You know, there's certain things that he's just really smart with that kind of stuff. He's definitely an engineer.
And you have a whole posse of brothers and sisters over here?
I do. I have a very big extended family.
How many do you have?
You know, I consider a lot of people that aren't blood related to be family because of my situation. So, like, both of my parents remarried and went on to have other kids or had kids before me with other partners, and then their partners have kids. So
you have an American family.
I have an all-American family. I have I consider myself having, you know, at least 7 sisters and 4 brothers from the immediate.
Because it seems like there is a whole quiver around you, you know, that is that. And your mother, very, very sharp. And
yes.
I've sat on boards with her, and she's, you know, Noreen, if you want to give her a shout out, I want to give her a shout out anyway.
My mom's an amazing educator too, and somebody that I've always looked to for that advice. And, you know, the education issue is an important issue to me because my mother was a teacher and still is a teacher. And I saw how hard she struggled as a single mom for many years to support us. And the great work that she does in not out of the box education which is a whole other conversation in itself, but how we activate and get kids out of the classrooms and get kids motivated and inspired to want to learn. And you know, I definitely owe a lot of who I am today because of the amazing mom that I had, for sure. And an amazing father that taught me a lot about environment. My dad was a teen member in Greenpeace and was involved in a lot of the activism in the 70s and stuff, and helped host No New Concerts in Santa Barbara with the Grateful Dead and all kinds of major activism stuff long before I was born. And you know, because of my father, I was brought into being a member of Greenpeace at a very young age, and you know, guaranteed went on to become the passionate environmental scientist and activist that I am because of the inspiration of both of my parents. So huge thanks. I've had an amazing upbringing with 2 amazing parents.
And you have been a big part of the whole broader surf community. There's so many things going on. Just to give a shout out, just throwing it in here, the Irons Brothers Contest is going on this weekend in Hanalei. I believe it is also a Kauai Ocean Recreation Experience. This is an incredible program.
Yes.
That's happening this Saturday. And the gift that the people who have physical disabilities give to the people who are assisting them in surfing is profound. That is where the real gift flows from. Well, it is wonderful for them to have the opportunity to be assisted out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I think, at least when I have been down there, I am just filled with gratitude,
yes,
you know, and
absolutely.
It's humbling. And to see how beautiful people are at expressing what they have to offer when even they have difficulties and they stay.
Absolutely. That's an amazing program.
Very, very, you know, happy and upbeat. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Marshall and Felicia, and Fern Rosensteel is in the room with us for just a few more minutes. She is running for District 14. That's the state representative for Wailua to Haena. Do you have any main thoughts that you want to be leaving people with? And if somebody wants to call in, 826-7771.
We've actually touched on a lot of issues and briefly enough. You know, I'm really honored to be from Kauai, and ever since I was a really young girl, I always knew that I would go away and I would get an education and I would bring it back, because I saw that we were kind of a vacuum of good, strong forces of education that can work for our community, and I just always wanted to come back and help in some way. And I didn't ever know exactly what I was going to do, but going away and getting my environmental science degree was always a focus to come back and work on native restoration. And it's not something I get to talk about very much, but my passion is really in ecology and environmental science in the form of restoring native forests. And I'm excited about, you know, all the different many things I can help around the nation, you know.
And more recently,
around the state,
business management in Hanalei.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you do.
Managing a staff of, you know, 30 or 40 can be interesting.
Yeah, and it's a really fun place. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to give some love to my girl Fern.
Okay.
She is an amazing person. I can't believe she's running for office. She's going to kill it. She is so dedicated to all her work. She always gives 110%, and she's such an amazing person that, like, I just can't believe a good person like this is going to be running an office, supporting us in office for us. It's going to be great.
So she has your vote?
Oh, totally.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fern, a caller would just like to know, once again, who are your parents?
Who are my parents? My mother is Noreen Doherty. She lives here in Kapaa. And my father is Gary Holland. And he passed away a while ago now, 2009.
Yes. Okay, caller, thank you so much.
No worries. That's fun.
All right. Thank you. So, Fern, one question that I didn't totally get out of you is, because it was some break, the Hawaiian community, the people, the nation of Hawaii, the kingdom of Hawaii, I'm mm-hmm. sure there are people listening from that community who is highly aware of the political situation that is here.
Mm-hmm.
What is your position on sovereignty and the right of the Hawaiian people to pursue self-determination?
I absolutely agree with it. I am well aware of the way that this country was invaded, and the kingdom overthrown, and I'm very, you know, now I know a lot of people throughout Hawaii that are really well educated on this, and I've got the opportunity to hear from many of them about those injustices, and I know that there are a lot of different opinions on how we move forward. You know, right now the Hawaiian kingdom talking, or the people of Hawaii talking about the different approach going forward with the Na'iapuni and the nation within a nation versus the total sovereign restoration of the kingdom of Hawaii. And I know that there are many strong feelings about it, but for me, I really do support self-determination, and I do support going forward in what way would be pono and what would be the right thing, because there are many wrongs, and we can't really keep stacking wrongs on top of wrongs, because eventually it's going to collapse. And I think we really need to look at, you know, how to do that. And to be honest, you know, there's a lot of people that I feel very close to that didn't want me in this situation and didn't want me running in what they will consider an entirely legal everything, you know, state system, you know, vote, everything. So I respect that, and I honor that. And, you know, one of the things that sits with me is some of the conversations that I had with Uncle Bobo Hamyang in the start of our establishment of Ohana o Kauai. I explained to him that I understand and I have a huge amount of respect for all of those that feel that they cannot engage in what they understand as an illegal system. But that in, you know, we also have to engage, because if we do not engage in the government of the occupying force, then we will have no impact in the future. When we do, when that country is, say, given back, and for all, you know, easiness of saying it like that, what do we have to give back? You know, what's going to be left if we do not engage now? How much illegalities, how much violations, how many strikes against, you know, the Hawaiian constitution and the Hawaiian morals and the Hawaiian values of how we treat our land do we accept before we get our country back? And then what do we have when the country is given back? What, you know, what kind of resources and what kind of, you know, for me, I've made a commitment to fight for food sovereignty, because I feel that before we can get sovereignty, we have to have food sovereignty, because we have to be able to stand strong and be able to feed ourselves and be able to support ourselves. And do I have an understanding of what the way forward is for that? No, I don't. But I do feel very strongly that in my lifetime, some of these wrongs will be made right. And I definitely feel very strongly that the people of Hawaii have to stand and unite under Hawaiian values and under for Hawaiian rights.
Well, thank you, Fern, so much for coming in here. And I'm kind of in the same space with you. At some level, we have to deal with two parallel realities and make the best of what's in front of us and allow that self-determination to determine itself. So thank you so much for coming to KKCR.
Thank you so much for having me.
Aloha. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Bridget Hammerquist.
Hey, Bridget. How are you? And you were at the joint fact-finding study also. So thank you for all that you're doing.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's my pleasure. Yeah, I just was listening to Fern. I'm really pleased to hear she's running. That's great news. Congratulations, Fern. And I'm a supporter of the work that she's done. She's great. And I, like Fern, left here a long time ago to go to college, left Kamakani, and knew someday I'd be home full-time. Can't say I knew I'd be working as hard as I am right now to try and preserve the environmental area down here on the South Shore, and, of course, it could impact the whole island. But I'm happy to do it. And I called in today because I believe in food sustainability as well, but I don't believe in industrial or factory farming, which hurts the environment, uses it up in short order, and then leaves waste behind, so much waste that the communities end up digging out and cleaning up for, you know, years and years and years. I mean, in places across the U.S. where people's well and drinking water has been destroyed by factory farm or industrial farming, they're looking at 50 years before that well water can be used again. If they have the resources, like in Des Moines, Iowa, where there's 504,000 people and they have the financial wherewithal to put in a $100 billion reverse osmolarity plant, you know, they can fix their water in a shorter order than 50 years. But it's still a potential disaster that's real. And I was listening to your interview with Carl, and I know you asked him, isn't there some closeness between the drinking water in Poipu and the proposed dairy?
Uh-huh.
And you were right on. It is less than 750 feet for a big well, 750 feet for the next big well, to the dairy property where they're going to have a sludge pad where they're going to dump manure sludge from an effluent pond, and they're also going to have cows grazing there. So that is a big reality, and I noticed, if you don't mind my commenting, Amy had a wonder piece in the newspaper today, and I wonder what part of the study she chose to read.
Amy Hennessy?
Hennessy, yeah.
Who works for Hawaii Dairy Farm?
Yes, she's their public relations person, and I can understand her wanting to put the best spin on it, but you know, we need to be factual and truthful at the same time. And I would really invite your listeners to go to their computers, if they have them, and look at health.hawaii.gov. It's a simple site, health.hawaii.gov. And then put in Waiopili or Maholepu and look at the sanitary survey. It's 105 pages long. And she cited to one page, for instance, in the article today, page 8, and said the Waiopili is a ditch, not a stream. But that's not accurate. If you go to page 8, you'll see the Department of Health refers to it as both the Waiopili ditch and the Waiopili stream, because Mauka of the proposed dairy site and Mauka of where they grew sugar. It was the Waiopili stream and the Wailau. They intersect. And then when it gets onto the proposed dairy site, it becomes the Waiopili ditch, man-made because it was a diverted stream which was widened, deepened, and straightened. And as that body of water leaves the dairy farm, it reconstitutes as the Waiopili stream. And the other thing she said in her, so look at page 8. Look at what the Department of Health calls it. They call it both, the stream and the ditch, because it's both. Also, if you go to page 35, she says in her article that the Waiopili ditch is not on the dairy site property. Well, the Department of Health took their map, the dairy site map, on page 35 of this report, and describes this ditch as going right through the center of their farm. And I think you know, Felicia, that we talked about it, I think, when we got the court order from the federal district judge allowing a site inspection.
Mm-hmm.
We had a team of scientists out there this past week on the 29th and 30th doing a site inspection, and they saw the Waiopili. They saw the ditch. And they saw it going right through the center of the property with pastures, cow pastures on either side. And, oh, by the way, they have an irrigation system, and they have crossings over the Waiopili to take this watering spigot system. It's actually kind of a big boom up in the air that sprays out. It's to spray out water, and it's to spray out effluent. And it has wheels on the bottom, and it literally walks across the property, and it crosses over the ditch, and they've put down crossings. They've literally laid down grates. You can see them from the air. You can see them in person. And as those wheels go through the pastures, they'll be picking up manure. They'll be picking up sediment. They'll be picking up fertilizers. And there's no washing station to wash the wheels as they go across the ditch. Also, if they take cows over any of those crossings over the ditch, cows poop when they're walking, and I don't think they're going to get to potty train them so they don't go as they cross the ditch. So to think that this ditch is going to be kept from the manure and the effluent and the urine that's going to be dropped on that property is, I think, not realistic.
And you're a lawyer, correct?
Yes, I am.
And you've been following a number of the decisions. I saw that Leslie Kobayashi had made a kind of a surprising court opinion that was supportive of the Friends of Mahalapu relative to holding Grove Farm accountable for grading and grubbing that had happened on their field, correct?
Correct. And basically what the judge said is that in their paperwork, the lawyers for Mahalapu Farms LLC, which is owned by Grove Farm, okay, that's the Grove Farm entity involved in the clean water case that we filed, and the Hawaii Dairy Farms, they have all have the same lawyers representing them. But in the paperwork filed with the court, they acknowledge that they've moved acres of soil, that they've dug and installed five, that they've created a number of conditions that would discharge muds, sediments, bacteria, sprays. They used glyphosate at one point to kill a whole bunch of the guinea grass. All of that stuff would have gone off into the waters of the U.S. But they say that they've stopped construction activities as of the end of 2014. They've created roads. They've created paths. And what the judge said to them was she, in giving us the right to inspect the property, she said that we had good cause, good ground to go out and want to inspect, that the citizen group is trying to preserve and protect the waters of Mahalapu, and which are waters of the U.S., and waters of the state. And she said that just because you stop construction activities doesn't mean you're not in violation of the Clean Water Act. The judge said you can have created a conduit that keeps the drainage happening even after you build it.
Yes.
And for every day that conduit is in place, you're in violation of the Clean Water Act.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of other legal questions since I have a lawyer on the phone with me. Are you paying attention to the fact that the appeals court judges will be on Oahu June 15th to hear the three different county cases? Two are GMO cases, genetic modified operations on Maui and Hawaii, and then also listening to the pesticide case here for Kauai. Are you following that?
Yes. I am. Paul Ashutoff and Earth Justice have done a pretty good job about, you know, keeping the public informed through HAPA of what's happening. That's also federal, but that's at the Court of Appeal level, as you just said. So that's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal?
Yes, because I think I'm just kind of trying to call your attention to that. I will probably go over for that, but Fern's nodding her head. Maybe she will, too. Maybe you want to go with us. It's good to have some people who are able to really interpret what is happening for that. So I see that that's coming up. And, you know, there's so many different issues. I know that you have gone over to work with the state, and Fern is running for a state office. I see something that made the Star Advertiser, one of my Akamai listeners has sent this over, is that Ige's community is seeking to criminalize trespassing on all state lands. So that's kind of really rough in terms of the homeless advocates. There are so many issues that are in front of the state and the citizens, you know, to be able to be working on these. Do you have a weather eye on those topics?
Well, not so much on state lands. I think some of that is to discourage trespassing for safety reasons, but clearly, you know, there's access issues, coastal access issues that have to be maintained, you know, for pash rights and otherwise, for people who live here. So I don't know how that's all going to play out. I agree that it would be really great to go listen to the Ninth. I had a few cases in the Court of Appeal in my time, and a couple published decisions, which was really exciting. You know, I remember getting called once by a Washington paper that got the printout, the release of a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal decision before I got it, even though I was the one that had argued it. So it is really exciting to go. And I flew over and sat in the Federal District Court on our clean water case in an early phase proceeding. I'll probably go again. I mean, it is really helpful to be on top of it. And basically the other thing the judge did was she kind of answered a standing argument where they didn't feel that, you know, citizens of Kauai had a right to bring an action claiming a violation of the Clean Water Act. But we very much do. And so, like I said, I really encourage people to go look at that study that Amy referred to on Mahalapu. And some of the things that are not in the study but can be found on the website, if you don't mind my commenting, Felicia. I think
okay,
that,
and then we're gonna have to wrap up in about 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll be real quick. I think it's incredible that in 2008, 2010, and 2011, there was no Enterococcus levels anywhere near like they were. And those were state numbers, state testing. See, Surfrider wasn't in their testing. And they were finding Enterococcus in 08 and in 2010 of 2.3. Hmm. As of 2014, that number went to over 2,005 for the state, and they actually got counts of 17,000. They sent the samples over to Honolulu Lab to confirm, and Honolulu Lab even got a 28,000 count of that bacteria in Mahalapu. So to say that the dairy farm hasn't contributed also doesn't comport with the study, because the study concluded three potential causes: moving of sediment, the potential communication through lava tubes with the Waikomo or Poipukaloa cesspools.
Yes.
Okay, and feral animals is the third. Bottom line, when you have bacteria counts like Carl talked about, over 15,000 or consistently over 8,000 every month for 2 years since that farm started to be developed in 2014, early 2014, you have those counts, you certainly are not Akamai if you think it's okay to add 699 pregnant cows, that's their startup herd, and mushroom to 2,000, which is what they want to do, when each cow puts out 143 pounds of wet manure per day. And that can be confirmed on the internet by anybody looking at what is standard waste production for a dairy cow. EPA says 2,000 cows produce a daily waste load equivalent to a city of 328,000 people. So all that poop in our little valley with the historic and archaeological significance that it has and the beauty, the sheer beauty, is outrageous in my opinion. So well, I'll keep working on it.
Okay, thank you for all the work that you do, and thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, aloha. Okay.
Aloha.
Marshall, I want to share just a few little pieces. There was both California and New York took action towards, this is a ways out, but doing the $15 an hour minimum wage. That was something that happened.
Both bills, excuse me, just signed recently.
Yeah, so that was a big deal. And then I want to just make a comment about two events. Like one thing tonight on PBS, Sabra Kalka at 7:30 is going to be interviewed. She's one of our kumus. She's a very talented person. I'm looking at John Gordon, who's coming up with Jazz with John. What an awesome pancake breakfast last Sunday, John.
We served over 700 meals.
Over 700 meals that contributes into some scholarships for students and entertainment, and such a wonderful group of hula dancers of all ages. Did you check out how the Wisconsin primary is continuing?
Yes, Bernie Sanders has rebounded a little bit to have just about 56% of the vote, which is closer to what he really needs to be getting at this point. Let me take this call.
Okay.
Bernie and Cruz.
Okay, Bernie and Cruz. That's what John says. Bernie and Cruz. Cruz would be for the Republican side. We're going to take a call real quick. Coming up soon, Jazz with John, and, you know, you'll hear the county council report. Aloha, you're on the air. I have to go real quick with you.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
So the person, Amy, she had a... editorial in today's paper, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, I read it.
Okay, what was your reaction?
I read it in its entirety.
Okay, and I...
And then I heard your guest that just left
uh-huh.
the phone.
Yep.
Who struck me as being an extraordinarily level-headed, deep-thinking, concerned... anti-inflammatory fountain of information.
You should meet her. She's overwhelming. She is very, very brilliant.
Yes, which made me think that the person who wrote the editorial, who is being paid by the... she's basically the spokesperson for...
the dairy.
Proposed dairy. Mm-hmm. You know... that her job title could be a professional bullcrap disseminator.
Okay.
I think we should, you know, bestow that title upon her.
As long as it's not in streams.
For excellence in twisting the facts of the report to suit the agenda of the people that she works for. I was really impressed on how your call-in guest exposed the total amount of BS that was disseminated in that newspaper editorial.
If you were to look at the Friends of Mahalapu website, that group of citizens down there, it's more than just Bridget Hammerquist who called in.
Sure.
They are doing such a robust study and really have invested a lot of personal costs to make sure that they are having a really solid look at what's happening there. And it is very impressive what they're looking at. And if I was the landowner or even the investor who's doing the dairy farm, I would be appreciative of it because they've done the due diligence.
You had an earlier guest on who talked about the pollution issue.
Carl Berg, or yes.
Well, I'm not sure who he was, but he talked about the one of the things that he mentioned was the difficulty in determining the source of the was it E. coli?
Yes. Well. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Endococcus bacteria.
And I know that he brought up at least one possibility on how to differentiate where that bad bacteria might be coming from. I'm just really struck by the fact that that valley is a relatively I don't know too much about the ditch, but the valley itself is a really well contained ecosystem in itself. It's basically a U shape. That's
yes.
contained by the mountains behind it.
Yes.
The Ha'upu mountain ridge behind it.
Yes.
And then it empties out into the ocean. And so every time that I read the reports from the Surfrider Foundation, that Waiopili stream seems to be one of the very highest.
The highest.
Counts of bacteria out of all the places that they measure.
That's correct. Caller, I have to get off the air very soon, so.
Thank you, but again, I wonder why is that one valley, that little tiny part of Kauai, such an incredible producer of bacteria? Where does it come from? How can we differentiate what is producing the bacteria?
Yes, and the
time.
Aloha, thank you.
Aloha.
Okay.
So I have a correction to make, Felicia.
Okay.
Actually, there is a caucus between now and New York, which is in 2 weeks from now. On Saturday, Wyoming holds their Democratic caucus. So Bernie Sanders does really well in caucuses. I would say look for him to do well there. Right now he is polling at about 56% in today's primary in Wisconsin, a little bit short of what he needs in order to keep on track for the total number of delegates that he needs. But there's also a correction on Marco Rubio's delegates and what happens to them. I said that they become free agents, and they don't. Depends on the state. Some of them become free agents. Some of them are otherwise allocated, and some of them have to vote for him anyway. He's trying to get them all, so they have to vote for him anyway. That's where that stands.
Okay, great. And so we are going to hear from Amy Goodman, and then we're hearing the county council report. So please support Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And then John Gordon is coming up with Jazz with John.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This has been Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Jazz with John is up next. And we are going to hear the county council report. And if that voice sounds familiar, that's because it is our beloved Jazz with John. It's our we do. We love you, John. You are just amazing. And John is another one of those people who just takes care of this community left, right, and center. So KKCR, Jazz with John, here's the County Council report.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of April 4th. There will be a council meeting at 8:30 on Wednesday, April 6th. The meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights in the agenda. There were submissions at this meeting regarding possible conflicts of interest by council members Chalk, Conishiro, Kualii, and Yukamura. The Budget and Finance Committee recommended approval of the police chief's request to build a storage mezzanine for approximately $80,000. The chief of police requests council approval to purchase 25 laptop computers to be used as mobile data terminals at an estimated cost of $75,000. That's $3,000 each. The Director of Planning transmits the Planning Commission's recommendations to amend the county code, adding a new Article 5B to allow for construction of additional rental units in the Lihue Planning District. This is proposed draft bill number 2627. The county attorney requests authorization to spend up to $40,000 for special counsel's continued services provided to the planning department for transient vacation rental, appeals, and related matters. The housing director requests approval to spend a United States Department of Housing and Urban Development grant in the amount of $133,000 for the continuation of salaries and fringe benefits for the two Housing Choice Voucher Family Self-Sufficiency Program coordinators to continue this program. The county clerk transmitted four claims against the county. Under committee reports for the Budget and Finance Committee, the Chief of Police requests for an unbudgeted purchase of 15 newly marked Ford Explorer patrol vehicles at an estimated cost of $50,000 to $55,000 for each vehicle for a total of $750,000 to $825,000 was approved. Under resolutions were confirmations of mayor appointment to the Charter Review Commission, Russell Wong, and confirmation of mayor appointment to the Fire Commission, Chad Pacheco. Under bills for first reading is proposed draft bill number 2627 for an ordinance to amend the county code, adding a new article relating to the Lihue Planning District. Bill number 2618 is under bills for the second reading and is a bill for an ordinance amending an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the County of Kauai for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the general fund. That's a Deputy County Attorney, Kauai Police Department legal support in the amount of $30,933, and the Budget and Finance Committee recommended approval on second and final reading. There is a non-public executive session. Purposes for the Office of the County Attorney to brief the council in matters concerning changing the governmental structure of the County of Kauai from the current system to a council-manager form of government, as well as discussion on the opinion issued by the Office of the County Attorney as it relates to this matter and related matters as well. Also, for the Office of the County Attorney to provide the council with a briefing on special counsel's continued representation of the Planning Department in TV. VR appeals and related matters. If the council is not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m., it will recess for a public hearing on Bill 2619 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to homestays, restricting homestays to the visitor designation areas in the County of Kauai.